I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Welcome back to Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
Today from the great state of Arkansas, we have Dr. Becky Whetstone, a marriage and family therapist, the author of I Think I Want Out, What to Do When One of You Wants to End Your Marriage. Thankfully, I don't think either of us want to do that, but we're going to have some questions anyway. Mm-hmm. Becky has been featured on CNN, in the Wall Street Journal, and Huffington Post. Welcome aboard. Glad you could make it.
So glad to be here. Thank you for having me to talk about my favorite subject.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. I want to start, as I think I mentioned to you previously, I've read a portion of your book. We have it, and I've read some of it, but not all of it. And one of the first things that struck me, and Julie and I have talked about it a little bit, are your traits that predict a happy marriage, surprising traits that predict a happy marriage. Tell us a little bit about those, how you came up with them, or where you came up with them, and what they are exactly.
I wish I could tell you that all the research from the book is mine, but if you look in the back of the book, there must be 200 and some odd sources, you know, where, you know, I studied the research. And marriage and family therapy, my field, has a ton of high quality research about what predicts a long-term happy marriage and what predicts divorce. And of course, we have to study that when we're in school. And so the king of our research is John Gottman. I don't know if you've ever heard of John Gottman, but
we love the Gottmans. And yeah, I am level one Gottman trained.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, he has the Love Lab up in Seattle, mm-hmm. and he interviews couples and he's our guru of mm-hmm. information and research. And he found that couples who are more flexible mm-hmm. and go with the flow and their fighting style is to laugh things off is a predictor of a happy marriage. So those are some of the main ones. In fact, you know, I was working with a couple yesterday where, you know, one of the spouses is extremely rigid. And mm-hmm. I was telling them about this Gottman research. It just doesn't work. You know, it mm-hmm. just, and part of the deal is think about that. Even in families, like the more rigid a family is, the more traumatized the children will be. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a good rule of thumb that rules, rigidity, trying to get people to conform is basically not healthy for mm-hmm. adults, children, families.
Yeah. So just a little bit about that. And I firmly believe that, you know, I work with couples and families that there's that all the time. But there are some conditions, there are some people, you know, especially people that are on the autism spectrum that, you know, tend to be very rigid or maybe have some OCD or really need to know the rules of the land, so to speak. So right. How, you know, knowing that and knowing what we would like, which is some flexibility, how do you work with couples that present with one or both of them being rigid?
Well, you know, I think the first step of, I'm a trauma-informed therapist trained by Pia Melody and Terry Real.
And love Terry. Love his
book,
love his
work. Yeah, and Terry Real is like the trauma guy for couples. And yes. Pia Melody is just the trauma queen.
Yeah.
And she's the one that came up with all these concepts. And Terry was mentored by her, and he took her concepts and developed a couples model from it called Relational Life Therapy. And so, you know, Pia's stance is the first step in trauma treatment is education. And so there are some basics of her model that I I teach to couples like we're in school, and I have a whiteboard and I explain things to them. And so in those conversations, it's going to be obvious that any sort of control, grandiosity, you know, a better than stance. Like I just talked to a guy this morning who's basically parenting his wife. I was saying, like, how's that working for you?
Yeah,
it's not. And they're both throwing around the D word, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So educational. That way, I don't have to say, "Hey, you're a controlling a-hole." You know, they'll figure it out themselves in those conversations where we're teaching, you know, what moderation is in the control spectrum. Mm-hmm. And then we will, if I find out they're, you know, rigid and stuff like that, then I'm going to be talking about, you know, in Terry Rill's saying, it's usually someone's trying to control somebody else. So they're being grandiose according to Terry Rill's model. Like you have two kinds of the toxic self-esteems are grandiosity, where you treat your spouse like you're better than, and you know what's best for them. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a parent-child relationship. And then you have usually a spouse who's got the other self-esteem, which is toxic shame, and they don't think they're good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that dynamic of the dominant person trying to control the other. And so when I can show them Terry Real's relationship grid, it's really clear that what they're doing is dysfunctional. So
it's interesting. We in our second book, one of the couples that we interviewed that got into the book of Secrets of Strong Couples was a couple where the husband, they had a young child. I think she was 7 or 8 years old, their daughter. And the husband had very, very severe attentional issues. And and wife came very close to the D word also, because she felt very strongly that she was tired of raising. She was fine raising her husband when it was just the two of them, but when they added a child to the mix, it got to be overwhelming to her. And the therapist that they worked with was very effective, I think, right, in developing strategies for the two of them to work through that and to make him more aware of those issues. And as far as we know, at least when we wrote the book, they were still together. We're assuming that's still the case, but that's interesting.
Yeah,
it is.
So how do you go there? How do you help them with, okay, so they figured out the education piece, which I love and agree with. It's sort of like, here it is. And then what's the next step in your work with couples?
Well, then I would say to them, now you're going to go out in the world and start practicing this, you know, and once you learn the healthy stances, I mean, in Pia Melody's model, there's 5 areas in which people become emotionally disabled, and basically they're immature. And that's what childhood trauma does to us. It makes us emotionally immature. So we've got these adult bodies, adult jobs. We may be super successful in everything, but our relationships tend to take place between the ages of 5 or less and 15. So this is why couples are coming in to see us, is because they're acting like, you know, children in their relationships. So once I've taught them, you know, the model and what the healthy stance is, then again, they're going to go out. And we're in the beginning, we're just shooting for 50% success rate. Because nobody's perfect and nobody's going to get it right. But it to me, like when I first learned it, I kept thinking, okay, so what is it now? What am I supposed to do now? And then in time, it kind of becomes like second nature, like learning to speak a new language. So in many ways, learning this model is like going to relationship school. And in the beginning, it's like awkward. But again, I think that you get a comfort level with it. And the other thing is you continually get rewarded with your relationship improving.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you're changing the way you speak to people and you're changing your approach, you're being more aware of your tone of your voice and all those things. So pretty much I send them out into the world to start trying it out. And then they come back in and tell me, you know, the obstacles that they're facing. And we keep tweaking and tweaking and tweaking.
Yeah, one of the biggest issues, and this is coming from a personal relationship, David and I, we've been married 39 years.
That's unbelievable. unbelievable,
right? And it's good. And you know, I'm trained as a family therapist, so I'm supposed to know exactly what to do. And then, of course, goes out the window when it's my own relationship. And one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about recently is, you know, sort of like what we need to do for our partner. So sometimes David talks a lot about being, you know, protective and has my back, which is like so, so important. And I think that that's really true. Sometimes you need to have your partner's back, but sometimes you need to walk along with them, right? So like if we're doing a visual here, so supporting and being with and enjoying things and taking in the world and the relationship. And then sometimes you have to do the hard things and sort of, you know, face your partner when they've done something, you know, that you don't like or you think is wrong, or, you know, or they're acting in a certain way. That is the trickiest part for me, because I know I need to have his back. I know we can walk along with each other, but that part where I need to, you know, almost like make a correction or call him on something. And I think that's where a lot of couples, they don't do that. And I think that that's really not great for your relationship. So I wanted your take on that and any strategies that you think are important for that.
And before you answer that, it's fortunate for you that you don't have to do that too often. So, because very rarely do I need to be called out on my baby.
But go ahead, Becky. 39 years, you've been trained pretty well.
Trained fairly well, yes.
Yeah, he is. He's usually pretty good. Well, but there's times, and it's in service to our relationship and to him, if I don't. But you have to do it in a very specific way. I mean, you know.
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah. So tell us, you've got clients in your office, and one of the partners.
Husband upstairs.
There you go. How long have you been married?
We've been married 12 years.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. So you're in there.
Yeah. But so you've got these clients in your office, right? And one of them says, this is what happened, whatever this may be. Mm-hmm. And so I told them X, Y, or Z. The other partner says, that right in front of everybody, mm-hmm. she said this, that, or the other. So walk us through how you deal with sort of recreating that situation, what you might talk to each of them about, how they might have done things differently.
Well, you know, I tell, first of all, you know, we got to be really careful to not be trying to control somebody, right? So that's mm-hmm. the number one thing. I also tell people to keep the golden rule in mind. Like if I'm going to correct or talk to my husband about something that's not working for me, you know, I'm going to be very strategic about it. I mean, you don't just walk in the room like a barnstormer with the guns blazing, mm-hmm. you know, because the person will get very defensive and blow back. So we need to create an environment where they feel very safe. Mm-hmm. They don't feel, you know, because what couples do is we're all traumatized. We've all got our issues, and you can be sure that that's what's going on when someone so-called overreacts. Like say mm-hmm. I say something to my husband and he mm-hmm. flies out of the chair. That simply means that I have hit one of his trauma wounds right there. And that's why, you know, he's having that kind of reaction, and he mm-hmm. can do trauma work over that so that the next time it's not so emotionally painful for him to hear from me. But I can help him avoid that by, and what I typically do, and this is, I mean, I like really softly walk into the room mm-hmm. and I make sure the timing is good. Mm-hmm. Like he's not watching the last hole of the Masters tournament. Yeah. I'm going to avoid that. So he's sitting there, you know, chill, and maybe he's loving up on our cat because his nervous system gets like really calm when he's loving up on the cat. And so I come up and sidle up next to him on the couch, and I'm really kind of adopting a flirting mm-hmm. Kind of tone and mm-hmm. body language. And I might rub his neck a little bit and I'll go, honey, is this a good time to talk? Mm-hmm. And he'll go, yeah, what have I done now?
Yeah. Sounds familiar, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a bone to pick with you, mm-hmm. you know. And so we're literally flirting with each other mm-hmm. while we're having a corrective
I love that.
Yeah.
Sharing
yeah.
conversation, and it works every time. I'm telling you, like it's absolutely fantastic. And the other thing is, you know, sometimes he'll annoy the heck out of me over something that I held in for a few days, trying to mull it over and decide what I'm going to do with it. And so I know a lot of couples do that too, and hold it, and it can turn into resentment and sort of a malignant marital cancer. So I tell people, okay, so when you realize that this is something that you really want to bring up with your spouse, a really great thing to do is to say, look, I need to have a repair conversation with you. And what a repair is a 10-minute conversation, and it's not meant to blame or finger point at all. It is totally a conversation of understanding each other. So I'm going to go in and say, okay, so we're doing our 10-minute repair, and he knows it. And I say, remember when we were at the party the other night and you went off and left me, and we're talking to all your friends and I don't know anybody there, and I really felt like abandoned and not looked after in that moment, and really hurt my feelings, you know, that you took off like that. And so, and then he'll go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know, I thought normally you're so gregarious. I just thought, hell, you've got it. I'm so sorry. Right. Had I known, I wouldn't have done that to you. And so then that's it. And it's, we understand each other. Because what'll typically happen at a party like that, the woman gets all damn mad and she's pouting and carrying on, and you know, and he knows he's getting ready to get the hammer over his head, and that's not conducive to us getting along. So it's just like, we've got to make our corrective and repair conversations. We've got to deliver them in a play, in a deal where the person feels safe and not under attack. So the, you know, the aggression's got to really be watched out, because the more people get in that, you know, it criticize, defensiveness, shutting down or storming out of the room, the more they get into that, that's a huge predictor of divorce. So we obviously want to use Gottman's wise advice about how to approach each other.
Yeah, no, I love that. And David and I do something similar, which is called safe talk, which is, we use the word safe talk. We have rules around what that looks like. And we'll enact safe talk when one of us has to, you know, talk to somebody about something serious or something that's on their mind. And that works really well for us.
Well, yeah, I mean, it, like you're talking about, it sets the tone for the conversation. And I'm sure that you've spoken with folks that you work with that sometimes it has nothing to do with what you're saying. It's how you're saying it, or when you're saying it, where you're saying it, that kind of thing. And so that's what you're talking about, which is understanding that to me, that how a message is delivered sometimes is more important than the message itself, or certainly equally as important. In terms of making the message getting the message to come through. And that took us, you know, personally, it took us a long time. And,
many, many years.
Yeah, long time to sort of figure that out, you know, and this, the safe talk thing. I'm going to tell her to try the flirting, because I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to go do something stupid just so she'll flirt.
He loves it. No, right. It's like he wants me to get mad at him, because he'll go, you're like so nice when you're mad at me.
Absolutely. It's awesome. Tell us, well, we're sort of on this, in this area, you talk a lot about common power struggles in marriage, and how to work, how couples can work their way through that. So tell us a little bit, you know, about that, about your work in that area of things.
Well, when you're talking about power struggles of saying, like a person, say a 21-year-old girl marries a 30-year-old man or whatever, and let's say that she hadn't been out in the world. She's really not grown up yet. And we know her brain is not fully developed at that time. And so she may appreciate in the beginning of her marriage, having a stronger, more, a man who's been more worldly and out there, and almost kind of have him as a pseudo parent, you know, a stepping stone place to go but what's going to happen so often is, over time, she may go to college, she may start a career or whatever, and she may be, she may grow up and change very significantly in that, in the, let's say the next 5 to 10 years. And typically at some point, in this case, if it was a woman, the woman is going to say, you know, is going to feel, at some point that she wants an equal seat at the table. Mm-hmm. Like the dynamic of the marriage is going to have to change. And whether a marriage makes it or not, at that point often is, can the guy allow the space mm-hmm. and room for her to grow and be different and not as dependent and not really dependent at all anymore and do that with grace. Mm-hmm. And in my dissertation research, I interviewed a guy, you know, who told me that he had to have a girl who looked up to him.
Oh,
and
wow.
So he was an optometrist and he had had a romance with one of his students that he taught mm-hmm. in optometry school. And she looked up to him and they had this whole dynamic I just described. And then she went to college and she got a powerful career and he told me that he could not stay married to her after that. When she became wow. kind of his equal, he felt that he wasn't needed anymore. And that mm-hmm. was, and so he went and had an affair with another one of his students. And I was like,
well, it's funny that you say that he needed someone to look up to him yeah. as being an optometrist. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I was laughing about that.
I
was laughing about that. But yeah, I mean, I can see that happen. And, you know, it's funny because one of the things that we've been asked over the years is, because we've been together for a really long time. I was 18 when I met David. We were in college. He was a little bit older than me. One of the things that I would say is that we've luckily, and it could have happened not, that we've grown together. I mean, I've changed a million times. He's changed a million times. And if we weren't changing together and adapting to each other's needs, wants, values, desires, we wouldn't be married.
There's no question about it. But, you know, that, you know, my pet peeve is that kind of people that aren't equipped to be married get married. And, yeah. you know, and they're not, you know, they're the people with, you know, certain strange views about how a person should live their life or try to inflict their beliefs on their spouse and stuff. And so that's one of my pet peeves is a lot of people get married that have that they're not healthy with themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's going to show up in the marriage. And then on the communication thing that we were talking about a little while ago about how to talk to your spouse. The biggest problem I have, because I do a lot of marriage crisis mm-hmm. management, so I'm dealing with people whose marriages are on the brink, and the person who's deciding, who's saying, I think I want out of my marriage, I think I want a divorce, 8 out of 10 times, this person has never, whether it's been 10, 20, 30 years of marriage, has never explicitly told their spouse they're struggling in the marriage and have been unhappy for a very, very long time. And they, of course, never went to marriage therapy. And so it's like these yeah. people become super disgruntled in their marriages mm-hmm. and never tell their spouse.
It makes
me crazy.
I think that's so interesting. And that's, I heard yesterday I was talking to somebody and they said, oh, so-and-so's husband asked for a divorce. And to me, it sounded like she was surprised, right? Like no idea that this was coming, sort of blindsided. And I was thinking about it and I asked a couple questions because I was curious, but like, how does somebody not know that their partner is not happy?
Well, before Becky answers it from the therapist perspective, I can tell you from the divorce lawyer chair is that I can't tell you how many times I've had folks come to my office and say, I can't even believe it. I never saw it coming.
Mm.
Right. And so to me, the obvious answer is for many of those folks is that they weren't paying attention. They just were not, they weren't seeing what was going on.
It's part of it. But, you know, a lot of people are presenting a false mask in their marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got this yeah. persona or something and they're, mm-hmm. and they just never share what's really going on with mm-hmm. with their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge problem. Like I just saw a couple yesterday married over 30 years that are on the brink of divorce. And I guess I outed the husband as having never spoken about this to his wife and all this stuff. And just by asking him some simple questions, did you tell her you were struggling? Did you? Right. I'm just like, what? You know, and then now it's like a boil.
The infection
just, you know, grows and grows and grows until like this, you know, it's about to burst.
Yeah.
And the woman is flabbergasted. Now, the thing is, she might have said, I knew we didn't have the perfect relationship. Mm-hmm. I knew that we could use some improvement, but I didn't know he was, you know,
at a door, so, foot out
so
the door.
Angry that he was thinking of divorcing me. And I talked to another couple a few weeks ago where the guy told me he had emoted it. Pouted on the couch, refused to go to the family picnic. And I said, so you expected her to deduce that you were unhappy? And he goes, yes.
Mm-hmm. She was honest.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'm saying is, people, you've got to explicitly, clearly, as soon as you realize your unhappiness in your marriage is serious, that's when you go tell your partner and go to a marriage therapist right then.
And do you find that for a lot of those people that are either masking or not telling people that they're just conflict avoidant and just don't want to like have a fight or get really vulnerable?
This guy yesterday told me he hadn't done it because he doesn't like to hurt people.
Yes.
So he's a good guy. You know,
like, yes.
And I'm like, well, you know what? We're adults. We're big boys and girls, and we cannot, but a huge codependent trait is you don't ever want to be uncomfortable. That's why they're non-confrontational. And I'm like, you can't have a high quality life without being uncomfortable. Like, so part of adulting is being uncomfortable and going and having the difficult conversations for the higher end game, which is to improve your relationship.
Yeah.
100%.
There's a lot of cowardice in marriage. A lot. And it
absolutely. You know, that's a great point. Great point. I mean, we've seen folks, you know, where one partner will say, oh, whatever he wants, until all of a sudden the whatever he wants has just blown their brains out. And then all of a sudden there's this big knockdown drag out. Mm-hmm. We had a discussion with a woman in a completely different environment, frankly, was talking about etiquette. And she made a point that I thought at the time, and I still do, makes a lot of sense across the board, which is, you know, be specific about what you want. Be clear about what you want. Mm-hmm. If somebody, in that particular instance, when your partner says, where do you want to go to dinner? Don't just say, whatever you want. If there's something that you want, you should say it. Now, that's a simplistic example, but that's sort of what you're talking about, which is to be particular about what you're thinking and what you're feeling.
Certainly, but a lot of people are, their compass is, what does she want me to say?
Yeah.
Instead of me speaking what my truth is, like, what does my spouse want me to say?
Right.
And you know, look, I'm sorry, y'all, but that's just, it's childish.
Yeah.
And so again, I think a lot of the kind of marriage therapy I'm doing is growing up. Growing people emotionally and start adulting in their relationship.
Yeah. I really love your perspective, and I see the value in your work. I mean, I think it's really important. I think any couple that comes to you is very lucky to have, you know, to work with you based on just this few minutes that we've spent with you. What's your percentage of success, if you will? Like, so you have like the hardest cases coming. I mean, you have people that are coming to you that this is their last ditch effort, right? What do they call that in football? It's a
Hail Mary.
Hail Mary. So you're like, you're like that. And I'm not good with football, but I knew there was something. It's like the last thing to try. So what do you know, like if you were to calculate, and I'm not going to hold you to it, but like, how do you do?
I want to say that a wild-ass guess would be 20%, 15 or 20% I'm able to get to some sort of non-divorce scenario.
Okay.
That's probably very good.
It's pretty good.
One of the things I'm saying to people is this, you know, we think, well, I've got to be happily married or divorced. There's no place in between. And I'm asking couples who are, you know, maybe they're sick of each other or they're the familiarity breeds contempt or whatever it is. We can come up with creative solutions for your marriage so it doesn't have to be divorced, but maybe you'll live across the street from each other. Maybe we renegotiate the terms of what we're doing here, you know, that would be conducive to both, good for both of you, where you can keep the family intact and y'all be relatively, you know, content. So I'm always asking couples, okay, so we can't go back to status quo where, you know, because that didn't work. And you really want to avoid a divorce, but you can't see your spouse improving, you know, as much as you want them to. So let's do something else, you know, so we can have a long-term kind of sort of separation, but you still date each other or something, you know, and that can change. And time they may want to get back together full time.
Do you find that once couples separate that they usually don't get back together?
No, that's not true. No, that's not true. And I think in my book, I talk about when I bring up separation, it's because they will absolutely end up divorced if they don't do it. So I use it for therapeutic reasons too. I tell people, look, you know, divorce is a concept and you haven't ever done it before, right? Most of my clients have never divorced before, although some of them have, but most have not. And so you don't know what being divorced from her or him is going to be like. So let's go try it before we do it. So I have them go, you know, separate and not have any contact during that period of time. And if they get a flat tire, they got to call AAA like single people do. And do stuff like that just to make sure that you know what you're doing. Because once you do the divorce thing, it's irrevocable. I mean, there may be 5% of couples do eventually get back after a divorce or, you know, some really low number. But for most people, it's irrevocable and you can't get it back if you have regrets. So I'm trying
to. It's almost like living together, but in reverse, right? We're going to live together, see if we like to want to be together under the same roof. But this sort of separating to see if we like it apart or whether we want to try to work on, you know, finding that path back together.
Typically the decider is so sick of their spouse at this point. That's why we're doing it. It's like just that person in the room is making them crazy. And so they may move out and go, this is the greatest thing. I love it. I love it. I love it. But you just give them a little time.
And it may not be that good.
It's like what goes up must come down. They will come out of their high of freedom and go, wait a minute, what the hell am I doing? You know, and that's what I'm hoping for.
And also when you do that, then the person individually can look at themselves and realize like, oh, wow, I have some stuff that, you know, like maybe I'm just depressed or maybe I have anxiety. I'm working with an individual right now who has severe anxiety and he was trying to go off of his medication. And I saw a pattern before that he really started overthinking his relationship as his anxiety increased. And so I worked with him and I said, listen, I said, there may be things about this relationship that are worth digging into and looking and maybe ending this relationship. I said, but you can't do it right now. You need to get back on your medication because this is overthinking, like an OCD overthinking it. And, you know, I think that's really important is that the individual mental health of somebody certainly affects the relationship and they have a better chance of realizing that if they're by themselves for a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, because the thing is people have divorce fantasies, you know, like it'll be so wonderful to date some new people and have lots of sex, you know, and have people that are super nice to me and all that stuff. And so they have these, and the kids will be fine Everybody will be fine. We'll all be better off for this. And then they get out there and it's just absolutely a nightmare. You know, that dating is horrible. Their kids are miserable. Kids don't want to be around your new girlfriend, you know, and so people start having lived experience of being divorced, you know, and that's far different from the fantasy.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I try to, you know, get people to see reality and as they process whether they want to stay or they want to go.
It's very interesting. It really is interesting. It's always a pleasure for me to find myself stuck between two mental health professionals. I shouldn't say stuck, but placed between two mental health professionals. Becky Whetstone, you've been a pleasure. If folks want to learn more about you, find out about your book, or maybe even reach out to you, what's the best way for them to contact you? And again, everyone, she's going to tell you, but we're also going to include it in the show notes.
Oh, super. I appreciate it. Look, my website is marriagecrisismanager.com. I also want everyone to know that before I was a therapist, I was a writer, a feature writer for newspapers, and I wrote a column about relationships back then. And so I'm really, really, really a writer. And so I write about relationships all the time on my blog. And you can go see my blog on Medium and just look for Becky Whetstone on Medium. I have almost 200 blogs. I try to put out one every week. And I'm telling everybody everything I know about relationships.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Awesome.
That's great. Well, I just want to add one thing. I have no fantasies about dating and being single out there again. I would have nightmares. I would not want to be dating. I have to tell you that.
Me neither.
Yeah.
So there you have it, folks. Thanks.
I was single for 10 years before my marriage.
So you know, you have a recent experience on that side of the fence, or in that pond, I guess we should say. Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard. Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you.
Thank
you so much for being here, Becky. Folks, thanks for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you next time, or hearing from you next time, on Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
Julie Bullitt is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullitt is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist, and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.